ओमज्ञानतिमिरं धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीमद् भगवद्गीता as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 4, Text 13. Those of you who know this may chant after me, line by line. Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam gunakarma vibhagasaha tasya kataram apimam vidya kataram avyayam. Translation. According to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. Although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. Purport. The Lord is the creator of everything. Everything is born of Him, everything is sustained by Him, and everything after annihilation rests in Him. He is therefore the creator of the four divisions of the social order, beginning with the intelligent class of men, technically called the Brahmanas, due to their being situated in the mode of goodness. Next is the administrative class, technically called the Kshatriyas, due to their being situated in the mode of passion. The mercantile men, called the Vaishyas, are situated in the mixed modes of passion and ignorance, and the Shudras, or laborer class, are situated in the ignorant mode of material nature. In spite of His creating the four divisions of human society, Lord Krishna does not belong to any of these divisions because He is not one of the conditioned souls, a section of whom form human society. Human society is similar to any other animal society, but to elevate man from the animal status, the above-mentioned divisions are created by the Lord for the systematic development of Krishna consciousness. The tendency of a particular man toward work is determined by the modes of material nature which he has acquired. Such symptoms of life, according to the different modes of material nature, are described in the 18th chapter of this book. A person in Krishna consciousness, however, is above even the Brahmanas. Although Brahmanas by quality are supposed to know about Brahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth, most of them approach only the impersonal Brahman, manifestation of Lord Krishna. But a man who transcends the limited knowledge of a Brahmana and teaches the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, becomes a person in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, a Vaishnava. Krishna consciousness includes knowledge of all different plenary expansions of Krishna, namely Rama, Nrsimha, Varaha, etc. And as Krishna is transcendental to this system of the four divisions of human society, a person in Krishna consciousness is also transcendental to all divisions of human society, whether we consider the divisions of community, nations, or species. So please take this. And don't put it underneath my foot, please. Bhagavad Gita is clearly a book of spiritual knowledge. And in this material world, spiritual knowledge is highly apt to be misunderstood. This particular verse doesn't, at least the first, or the topic of the verse is the four divisions of human society, which is not in and of itself a directly spiritual topic. It's talking about organization of human society. It is one of the most misunderstood topics of Bhagavad Gita because the Varnashram system, which Krishna speaks of here, is often equated with what is now known as the caste system in India. But that caste system, which is gradually breaking down in some ways due to urbanization and a completely different way of life, and also some governmental attempts to dismantle it, that is the one distinguishing feature of it is that it's based on birth. But in this verse in Bhagavad Gita, we find that Krishna says that the four divisions of human society are based on guna, the particular qualities of a person, and karma, or the work of a person, and particularly the inclination to work. Different people are attracted to different kinds of work. Different people are suitable for different kinds of work. Recognizing this, Krishna has made the varnashram system, which here in this verse the varnas are talked about, which means the division of human society into brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras, which means brahmanas means priests, intellectuals, the spiritual and temporal guides of human society. Kshatriyas means administrators, not just administrators, but warriors, those who will protect human society. The Vaishyas, they are concerned with trade and production of food, and the Shudras are laborers, artisans, artists, and so on. I chose to speak on this verse here today because I was informed that Tukaram Prabhu, who, those of you who live here in Laguna Beach and frequent the Hare Krishna temple here, are well aware with him as the leader of the Hare Krishna community here. I had heard that he was promoting within our society, particularly within the United States of America, at the leadership level, a policy which our own Srila Prabhupada had very strongly promoted, which is the protection of cows. Now, this might, or it might have seemed, a generation ago, something completely against the American ethic, especially in the West. The Wild West means cowboys. Krishna's also a cowboy, but he's not a cow killer, as the cowboys of the American West were. I remember seeing in my childhood an advertisement for a charity which is maybe the most famous in Britain, where this time around I was born, Oxfam. Have you heard of that charity? No. You've heard of it, yeah. It's a big thing. Highly respected. For doing good work all over the world. So I saw an advertisement. It struck me. I mean, in my childhood, I must have seen, every moment we see so many things, but this stuck in my memory. There's an advertisement for Oxfam highlighting the ongoing drought and famine in Bihar, which is a state of India, and it was coming in the news a lot in England at the time. Later, when I went to Bihar and I spoke about it, no one knew what I was talking about. They were not aware. We were aware of it in England, but in Bihar itself, they weren't aware of it. Funny thing. So anyway, there was a in their advertisement for Oxfam. Advertisement means they want your money to do good work. And in the advertisement, it showed a photograph of an old man, very thin, with all his bones showing, and a cow. standing next to a cow. And Oxfam said that the gist of their advertisement, which struck me, so that I remember it to the present day, is that you should give money to us because we're not just feeding hungry people, but we are educating them. You see, there are people starving in Bihar, and there are so many cows, but no one will kill them. So we're educating them to be not so stupid, and they should actually kill the cow so that they can survive. Which actually, in Mahabharata, there is an instance like this where it is theoretically possible, according to Shastra. So that stuck in my mind, and when I came in contact with Krishna's cow protecting culture, which is very, very different to the Wild West culture, or, again, where I'm from, the British pride themselves on being beef eaters. The idea that if you eat beef, you become very strong and it's very masculine. It came in my mind, this advertisement, and what a completely different outlook on life these people have. And it also struck me that very old men with their ribs showing, well, that's quite commonly seen in India, because people, when their parents go old, they don't send them off to some institution where they can't be seen, but they keep them at home and look after them like they look after the cows who have given milk throughout their life. They look after them in gratitude until they pass away. And it's quite, in the hot climate of Bihar, it's quite common that men go bare-chested, and that old men whose digestive system is broken down, they have ribs showing, so they may not be starving, they're just getting ready to die. It's a normal thing. No one tries to hide it in India. They just take it as death is part of life, and as we've had so many lives, and we're just going from one to another. So Srila Prabhupada, some 40 years ago, coming on 50 years, he introduced this Krishna consciousness to the world on the basis of Bhagavad Gita, and it is a sublime, this is a word that Srila Prabhupada often liked to use, a sublime spiritual culture. But we find in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna gives direction to human society how to live in this world. It's not just meant for the individual spiritual uplift, but Krishna gives direction in Bhagavad Gita and in the whole corpus of Vedic literatures, of which Bhagavad Gita is the essence. There are many directions on how to live in this world in a manner that we can become detached from it, purified, and go to the spiritual world. It may not be that everyone's going in this lifetime, but everyone, by participating in this Vedic culture, can make gradual progress, or at least, at the very least, by taking the directions in the Vedic literature, they can be saved from grossly sinful activities, which will, by the laws of the universe, the subtle laws of karma, cause great suffering to themselves and to others. And a prime example is, again, cow slaughter. We probably all know many people who are what we might call nice, decent people who nevertheless eat beef. In their general behavior, they're nice people, but they don't understand, or they've not been raised in a culture which explains to us the subtle laws of the universe And one of them is that cow slaughter is actually disastrous for the whole of human society. I mean, even if we don't accept Bhagavad Gita, which obviously I do, and those of us here who are committed to Christian consciousness do so, but even if we, California is undergoing a severe water shortage. What are you going to do? Flush the toilet less. That's not a bad idea. Well, maybe you should flush the toilet or put a brick in your, put a brick in it so it doesn't take up so much water. You can go and pee on the lawn. That'll give it some, or on the garden. That'll give it some fertilizer. That's another suggestion. But if everyone in California peed on the lawn instead of flushing, that would make a difference. But the main water consumer is, a major water consumer is the meat industry, as they call it, which is a horrible thing to say if we think that living beings are considered part, they're an industry for us to treat in however we, whatever way we like, so that we can eat them. So people don't know. We can't fault them for not knowing, but we should make them know also. Let them consider that animals suffer if they are mistreated. So Srila Prabhupada, I was talking about Srila Prabhupada establishing, he wanted to establish Krishna consciousness not only as what we might call a religion or a religious process, or for certain individuals, but he wanted to introduce to human society a whole way of life that is based on God realization. Every society, whether it articulates it or not, is based on a particular approach to life or a worldview. So, of course, in discussing such things, we have to make generalizations and simplifications, but we can pretty safely say that the modern consumeristic Western civilization is based on the idea that just enjoy the world as much as you can. Whereas Krishna's Vedic civilization is, again, based on, first of all, the understanding that this world is not a place of enjoyment anyway, and however much we try to enjoy this world, we're not going to be happy, because the very nature of this world is full of misery. Even in Southern California, where, in Laguna Beach, people tend to be, they tend to have the four prominent symptoms of good karma, which are mentioned in Vedic literature. Janmaishvarya Shutashri. Janma means high birth. So we can say birth in America, it's a powerful country. It's certainly, in many ways, a better birth than, for instance, in Cambodia. Aishvarya, there may be some beggars in Laguna Beach, but I don't think they're anywhere near a majority of the population. Most people here are well-to-do. Shuddha means intelligence and education. So mostly people here are quite sophisticated, I would guess, and well-read, thoughtful. And Shri means bodily beauty. So we do find people in this area also tend to be quite good-looking, at least in their youth. And as I look at some of the older people here, they may not be presently suitable for pin-ups photos, but quite likely they would have been in their youth if they were interested in such things. So even though we find people in this area, definitely we can surmise that they must have been pious in a previous life, by which they have many facilities for material enjoyment. And the weather's great, except it was probably like a little more rain time to time. How much can you ship in from behind the mountains? But despite having all these facilities for material enjoyment, people are, on the whole, not very happy. And many people are not only not very happy, but are, although they may not show it outside, severely distressed internally. They may not even admit it to themselves. So Krishna in Bhagavad Gita teaches us that, well, if you're not happy, that's not surprising, because this world is not a place of happiness, and even if we have our facility for happiness, we can't be happy in the truest and fullest sense of the term, because as our nature is spiritual, we are meant for spiritual happiness. That means eternal happiness, complete happiness, non-exploitive happiness, the happiness of sharing love with others, specifically centered on Krishna himself, who is the supreme object of love. Hare Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada, he came to the West, he brought Krishna consciousness, and he had a social program for reforming human society so that people could live simply and happily and peacefully in this life, as far as it is possible to live happily and peacefully in this world. And make progress toward the ultimate goal of life, which is to be free from birth and death and to go to the spiritual world, to live there eternally in complete bliss. So a cornerstone of the social system that Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish is called Varnashram. And a cornerstone of that, absolutely essential to that, is cow protection, which in the 1960s, when Srila Prabhupada was first ministering in America and in the Western world, it was a concept so foreign that that most people couldn't even begin to get their consciousness around it. But the time is coming when many people can understand that we should. It is intrinsically wrong. We may not understand it, but it is intrinsically wrong to torture animals or to kill them for the pleasure of the tongue when it is not necessary for human sustenance. Particularly cow protection is a central point of Vedic culture, because one thing is that Krishna, he's the supreme lord, that same person who has been pretty badly represented in the Western world by the name God. He's the supreme loving person. He can do whatever he likes, and he does do things. He's not just some sitting on a cloud listening to people strumming harps. He's active. He's joyful. He's sharing love with others, which means there are activities. God is active, spiritually active. What does he do? Well, he is, of course, in one sense we can't define God, but he is, by his own definition, a cowherd boy. That doesn't mean a cow killer. But he can do whatever he likes, and he does whatever he likes. And he dances, he sings, he dresses very nicely, he eats nice food, very healthy food. Not that he can become unhealthy. But what he does throughout the day is he looks after cows. So that's a major reason for protecting cows. It's because Krishna, although he loves every living being, he particularly likes cows. So to kill cows is, it goes against what Krishna, the source of all love, wants for us. The cow also provides milk, which is the best food for human society. Now, I know there are many vegans who say that it's actually bad for you, and there are increasingly people who are allergic to lactose. That's a bit of a complex discussion. I believe there may be reasons for that, which also caused by the hormonal imbalance that imparted from parents who eat all kinds of foods which are not meant actually for human consumption. But actually, according to Ayurveda, which is the ancient Vedic science, it literally means the science of life, which teaches us, first of all, how to keep healthy. And I'm not doing a very good job, it seems, by having a cold. But if you travel around in the modern world to spread Krishna consciousness, it also involves going in airplanes. A few days ago, I was on an 11-hour flight, and I guess I picked up the cold there. So excuse me for not practicing what I preach in this regard, but I guess that's beyond my control. So living a healthy life, getting free from disease, Ayurveda. And Ayurveda, like all the Vedic literature, it points us toward maintaining the body so that the body may be used for God realization. So Ayurveda teaches us that cow's milk is that. By cow's milk, we don't mean that stuff full of hormones full of hormones that have been injected into the cows and all kinds of nasty things. But a pure cow's milk nourishes the brain tissues, which are conducive for a contemplation of higher spiritual subject matters. There's actually a difference between the cow's milk that comes from indigenous Indian cows and the kind of cows that are in the West. And that's known now by modern scientists who want to... There's now a move to introduce Indian cows in the West, because the kind of milk... Actually, the milk that comes from Western cows, it can be harmful to people with certain conditions. But it's been discovered that milk from indigenous Indian cows is actually much more beneficial for health. So, and if that is made into ghee, the essence of milk, that also has tremendous prophylactic, therapeutic, nourishing properties. So it's all part of the God realization package, that we need to protect cows. If there is a subtle karmic fact, which many people who are aware of karma and the law of karma, they're not aware of the karmic fact that if we protect cows, if the cow is happy, then human society will be happy. If the cow is mistreated, then we can have peace conferences, we can have different kinds of political theories, but humankind will always be unhappy. It's not, this is a karmic situation, which it's not only that what we do affects future lives, but it affects us here and now. We may think that it's insane. Why is there terrorism in the world? And why is there so much fighting? And we can talk about it, but as long as we have a culture of mistreating animals and birds, and particularly cows, then there cannot be peace in human society. And the tendency that we have to slaughter and torture living creatures other than humans will spill over into the human sphere. So we'll take it as collateral damage in our geopolitical machinations that some people get killed. So cow protection, it is not simply some Hindu fetish. That term is sometimes used, holy cow. And it's the term holy cow is a somewhat sarcastic term that is used to and it's used analogously to describe something that people believe to be true, some kind of dogma for which there's no basis in reality, and which is actually quite stupid. But actually, as we understand from Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic literature, all the Vedic literature, cow protection is a cornerstone of human civilization. We cannot actually call a society civilized in the true sense of the term, even if it has very sophisticated highways and internet connections and computers, and even if we have such high-sounding declarations that we take it, what is that in the American Constitution? We take it as axiomatic that all humans are created equal in the eye of God, something like that. As Americans, you're supposed to learn this in school, but I didn't have to because I was raised in Britain, where this was drawn up by the founding fathers of the nation after they'd kicked us British out. But anyway, there's very high ideas, and these are enshrined in the United Nations Declaration of Independence. All humans. But what about all the animals? What about that? So the Vedic culture, by teaching us, the beginning of Vedic culture is to understand who we are, what the purpose of life is. Not everyone will understand that. Not everyone's going to be a great philosopher. But society should be directed on a philosophical basis of an understanding of the actual purpose of life. That was attempted. A philosophical basis for society, well, we're always trying to find that. Communism had a philosophical basis. In modern America, there are so many books being written, so many think tanks, which give so many newspaper articles, which try to give some philosophical basis. Just like, for instance, the feministic movement. It was perceived that women were being unfairly treated, and there was a lot of agitation and philosophical theorizing, and things changed. So in any civilization, it is recognized that we have to have some kind of philosophical basis. It may be, as in communism, based on a particular manifesto, the Communist Manifesto, or it may be one that is open to evolution, as in modern society. Krishna's Vedic culture is based on the understanding that every living being, not only human beings, are by nature spiritual beings. And the goal of life for everyone, especially those in the human form of life, is to attain liberation from the cycle of birth and death, and ultimately to attain pure love of Krishna, the supreme loving personality of Godhead. So it's also recognized that not everyone recognizes this. It also recognizes that most people are interested in material enjoyment. So there's allowance for that. But there is regulation also. So in one sense you could say it's a theocracy, but it's not based on some blind dogma, but it's based on the understanding that bodies are temporary, we are eternal living beings, that we are in the particular situation that we are in now due to our previous activities, and our future will be determined to a large extent by our present activities, as well as ongoing cumulative effects from previous activities. It's not that they're all discharged in one life. So, in this Vedic culture, which is on a basis very, very different to that which we presume to be normal and normative here in America and in the Western world in general, although it might be considered that there are large sections of the population of the world who have a different outlook on life altogether. For instance, the Islamic world. And although Islam is often presented as being a fanatical and dangerous religion, and although certain elements of it appear to be like that, but there are many, many Muslims who are very seriously dedicated or take as the worship of Allah as the goal of their life. And believe it or not, they're not all terrorists. So I'm just giving that as an example, that there are, it's not necessarily true that what everyone in the Western world thinks is, well, society should be like this. But it's not that everyone in the world thinks like that, and they're not necessarily bad people for not thinking like that. Krishna's Vedic culture starts off with this, like I say, the spiritual knowledge that we are eternal spiritual beings. We are meant for release from birth and death. Everyone is meant to make progress on that and to accommodate people in of different mentalities, different levels of spiritual progress, so that according to their present disposition, they may make spiritual progress. Which means that not everybody is treated equally, which is very difficult for people in the modern age to accept, that not everyone should be treated equally. Anyway, I was focusing on that point of cow protection. It's a very big package. It's a very, very big package. A whole different approach to life based on spiritual realization, of which cow protection is central. Without that, we cannot actually have real civilization. If the cow is our mother, she gives us milk. To kill our mother is obviously something uncivilized. Yeah, Tukaram Prabhu, I suggested I'd speak on this topic, and he wanted me to speak somewhat about some of the pilot Varnashram projects which some devotees, some member of the Hare Krishna movement in India, where I'm based, I've spent most of this life in India, some of them are undertaking. Srila Prabhupada's vision in establishing this society, that was one of the main facets of that was to establish rural communities based on producing, living simply, producing our own food, protecting the cows, and in this way, by living with devotees, we can create a fully spiritual atmosphere in which everyone is cooperating to serve Krishna. And by living simply, we don't need to work very, very hard, because we don't need electricity or cell phones or any of these things. As has been the way of life in the world for literally millions of years, if we accept the Vedic version, which we do. We don't accept the Big Bang and Darwinian version. People lived on what God gives to us via the land. Our bodily necessities, our principal bodily necessities are food, clothing, and shelter. Those of you who are from India, from little older generation, you may have heard, it's often used the term roti, kapra, makan. So all of this comes from there. Obviously food comes from the land. Although I have experienced, what seems very comical to me, that many people here in cities in the West, if you go and pick some pot herbs from which are growing in a park, and take them and cook them, then people will be very scared. What's that? It's you just picked it up from the land. The same thing they'll go and buy in the store, and then they'll feel very comfortable. They think that food comes from a store. They're afraid if you pick it, it might be poisonous or something. It's more likely to be poisonous if it comes from the store. So food should be obvious that it comes from the land, although nowadays most people seem to think, where does milk come from? It comes out of a, what do you have it, in cartons here? In America, it comes in cartons. And then just like in London, the city that I'm from, or London, UK, children are taken on school outings outside of London so they can see for the first time in their life a cow, and a cow being milked. And they're amazed. Oh, milk is coming from an animal. What they know is that milk comes from a carton which comes from a fridge. So, believe it or not, food actually comes from the land. And most people in the world still live on the land. It's just tipping. Actually, it just tipped in the last few months, the tipping point. Now more than 50% of the world lives in urban settings. So food, clothing comes from the land. Now, much of our clothing nowadays is produced, polymers, polyesters, nylons, which are not good for health. Otherwise, cotton, obviously, comes. Is it obvious? Maybe not. Who's seen cotton grow? You don't grow cotton in this part of America. That's in the southern states of the USA. And, of course, in India, cotton has been a part of the culture since time immemorial. Again, it's in certain areas, not in all of India. Anyway, I won't get into farming demographics in India. It's been off topic. So cotton, flax, jute, wool from sheep and llamas and goats, these are all wool producing. Leather, actually, that's also can be used for shoes. You might not want to use that, but if animals are left to live their life without being slaughtered, when they die, that's considered acceptable in Vedic culture. Not everyone will use it, but leather shoes is acceptable within Vedic culture. Killing cows is not, but using leather from dead animals is acceptable. In most of India, it wouldn't get cold enough so you wouldn't have a leather jacket, which here in California still there are the bikers who like to ride on their big Harley Davidsons, and definitely in the winter, if you're going on a Harley Davidson, you're going to need a leather jacket. But if we're living in Vedic culture, we probably wouldn't need leather jackets. So that comes from the land. Hemp, that much maligned plant, has very good use. We don't recommend smoking, products of hemp, but it actually makes very good cloth also. So from the land, we get food, we get clothing, and shelter, houses, whether from wood or from stone or Eskimos, from snow, from bricks, that's also, it all comes from the land. So by God's arrangement, everything is produced. Everything that we need for our human necessities are available from the land. And our highest necessity, which is cultivation of spiritual advancement, that goes very nicely with simple living on the land. It comes practically automatically, because when one lives in the lap of nature, one understands that we're relying on the land, we're relying on nature, but that is not under our control. There is a higher power, the rain, the wind, the sun. It's all necessary, a certain amount of sun at certain time. It all depends on higher powers. We are not, we can't, you can bring fertilizer, you can have a PhD in agriculture, but if there's no rain, if there's not sufficient sunlight at the right time, you can't grow anything. I'll just throw in a little anecdote here. A few years ago, I was speaking to a devotee from Slovenia, which some of you may know is a small country in Europe. And I was asking about him, and he told me he grew up on a farm, his family farm, which is parents and grandparents and great-great-grandparents. It's the family farm. So I asked him what he's doing. I said, well, I'm taking a degree in Ljubljana, the capital of Slovenia. I said, why are you taking a degree? Your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, they lived on the farm. Why don't you just do the same? And he told me, well, I do plan to, but nowadays, if you want to farm, you have to have a degree. You're not allowed to do farming without a degree, because you have to learn about all these different complex methods of spraying with different poisons, and it's absurd. So Krishna provides everything that we need without massive industrial enterprises that sap the spiritual vitality of people who actually, living in a big city, it actually, just by living in a big city, unless we have a very strong spiritual sadhana, spiritual daily activities of chanting Hare Krishna, associating with devotees, we're going to get sucked into materialistic consciousness, especially when these modern big cities are based on consumerism, which is meant to make us actually stupid, because we're supposed to keep the whole thing working. We have to buy more and more things that we don't need, and we have to work more and more to make them. So we are required to be stupid to run on the society. And we're educated like that. So the modern life, with the whole ethos of modern life, and the factories with the pollution, and the impersonal way of life in which we're just an employee, we have a job to do, and the employer doesn't give a damn about us, although they might pretend to. It saps the very humanity from us, what to speak of our spiritual inclinations. So Srila Prabhupada had the plan to establish these Varnashram communities. So I was saying in India, some of our devotees, they wanted to do that based on Srila Prabhupada's teachings, and especially because as devotees of Krishna, studying Srila Prabhupada's books and realizing what a great treasure is there, and what is the value of human life, and how we have to live this human life in such a way that we don't get degraded, that we become spiritually elevated. So these devotees who have they've left their well-paying, prestigious jobs to go and live on the land, producing their own food, deliberately living without electricity. Even in the heat of India, and the cold, it also gets cold in the winter. The main reason which spurred them to do that was because of their children, because they didn't want to expose their children to the degradation of modern life. And actually, in some ways, in India, in some ways, it's more materialistic. The way of life is more materialistic than in the West, because in the West, well, materialism, that's just it, and it's there. And many people, I would guess, many of you here are looking for something different. But in India, it's people still believe in the idea that we're making progress by having more and more industries, and that science will elevate us, and we have to have a good job and earn plenty of money. That's very much the conscious, and we should have all kinds of gadgets. Of course, people in the West do that also, but in India, it's a strong mood of what when people will have. They'll have a little card on their name. They'll put their educational qualifications and what the job, the senior manager in such and such chai stall or whatever. That's just a joke. And what the children learn at school, they have to watch television, because they'll get asked in the class in the morning, that the teacher will tell them, okay, you have to watch this program on TV tonight, and you're going to get asked questions about it tomorrow. And absolutely horrible programs in which they deliberately promote through the TV all kinds of degraded things. And the children have to watch that. And if they don't, they fail in their test, and all the other children think they're stupid. It's an anti-spiritual atmosphere. So our devotees, they've taken this bold step of moving to the land, growing their own food, protecting cows, and educating their children from the beginning of life in the real values of human life. So, Hare Krishna, I just spoke a little bit about it. It's a huge topic. This should be done in America also. I was just speaking with Tukaram about Prabhu about this. His vision is, let's start with cow protection and move from there. We are fortunate by Srila Prabhupada's grace to have a vision of how people could live very happily in this life and make spiritual advancement by living simply on the land, producing what we need, not working more than we need, and spending the rest of the time celebrating Krishna's mercy on us, Krishna's consciousness, singing and dancing in praise of Krishna. So, it's time for a revolution in America, right? You had one American revolution, and ever since then it's been, well, especially we could say in the last 50 years or so, it's been really a devolution. And America is in a big mess. I think anyone who's objective about that can understand this country's in a big mess. It has tremendous social problems. What to speak of its fiscal problems, which are anyway, you know better than I. If anyone's just a little bit intelligent and follows what goes on in the news and this and that, you might not want to see Fox News. You might not get the right story, exactly. But it's really a disaster. It's really a disaster. As we see in the history of any great civilization, that decadence is the precursor to absolute collapse. So it's time for another American revolution. How about the We may say Krishna consciousness, okay, but we may say, what about society? How about this? Varnashram, living on the land simply, protecting the cows. Any volunteers? Are we ready to accept volunteers? Yeah, but there would be. We have to work on this as a priority. That's my message. Srila Prabhupada's message. We have a lot of work to do. Devotees of Krishna have to be compassionate for the suffering condition of human society. By Srila Prabhupada's grace, we've been introduced to this very, very happy life of Krishna consciousness. We have to communicate that to others also. Hare Krishna, thank you for patiently listening to me. Hare Krishna. Thank you for having me here, even though what I say may not always be the most palatable kind of thing or the most acceptable kind of thing. I did try, I don't know how successfully today, to follow some guidelines which Tukaram Prabhu suggested that I follow. I don't know how successfully I followed them. But anyway, he's here to clean up after me. So if you have any problems with anything I said, just see him. Yeah, that looks like a question is floating in. Details about the farm. Well, in one sense, there are not that many details because we're deliberately starting small. And taking it step by step. One interesting thing is that so many devotees used to say, well, no one will be interested. No one's going to join any such farm. But when we start it, we find that many devotees are interested, which is actually quite surprising to us. In America, I could understand that many people would be interested. Not the least the guys who are parking on the beach in their car because they have no place to stay. The car, they can hardly move it anywhere and they can hardly pay to register it. But I suppose I saw in San Diego, there's so many people living on the beach and probably the cops move them on at night and this and that. Not least them. We have a program for them. You come and live and work. We'll feed you and give you a place to stay. We should have a program for them. You can't, there are some restrictions also. But you want a place to live with happily and nicely, come and stay with us. So in India, it's somewhat surprising that actually people do. There are, at least among our devotees, quite a few devotees who are interested in this. When they see what it is, they might think again twice because it is a big jump from urban life and people cannot imagine what it is like to live without electric fans, for instance. But those, the biggest selling point, if you want to use that analogy for this, is that the devotees themselves are so happy. And I came to one of these communities and I'd been away for a few months and it was just after I'd been in the West and it must have been 2 years ago and it was just after the hot season in India, which is now, and you know, it's hot with a capital H and it goes on and on and on. It's not just a few days go above 40 Celsius, that's 100 Fahrenheit, but day after day after day. So you can imagine it's quite difficult, especially if you're not used to it, to live without electricity. So anyway, I came and visited them after being in the West. And I said to one couple who greeted me there, your face, I said to both of them, your face has changed in two ways. One, it's a lot darker than it was. You can imagine Indians who are brown skin, if they spend a lot of time in this, not that people are going sunbathing, but just even to walk from one building to another in 100 degrees plus Fahrenheit temperature, then you're going to get affected. Just like I saw when you bowed down, that there's a difference between the tan on your neck and below that, it's whiter because you wear a shirt. So I said, it's become much darker. Your face has become much darker, and it's become much brighter also. It was visible that even though they were very serious devotees, seriously practicing, before they made the move to the land, but after moving to the land, because they had the opportunity to engage in full-time Krishna consciousness, they're living with devotees, they're, whatever they do with devotees for Krishna, and their response was, oh, thank you so much for directing us to come to the land. We're so grateful. So that's the best advertisement, is that the devotees who make that shift, and you have to be fully into it. It's not a holiday. You might do it for a few days as a holiday, but you have to be really committed, because it is the comfort level. The immediate comfort level goes down quite considerably. But the happiness that they're feeling in living with devotees, actually there's great happiness which people, one form of great happiness which is not in itself spiritual, which people traditionally all get, which modern people don't get, is the happiness of growing your own food, nourishing it with the prayers of Krishna, and then cooking it. And if you offer it to Krishna, the happiness becomes increased millions of times. But it's so gratifying to grow food and from the seed and flowers and nourish it and watch it grow. And then just when it's ready, you pick it, immediately cook it, and offer it to Krishna. That in itself is so satisfying. Even Bill Gates or Barack Obama or whoever, they never experience that. They have no idea of that happiness. It's so simple. Yeah, you're going to say something. Not having electricity has certain benefits. One benefit is that if there is electricity, there's the tendency to want to use it in by having different devices and gadgets which cost money, and then you're going to have to work harder to produce extra food, to sell it, and then you get caught in the whole money spiral. And it means that we have unnecessary things that we don't actually need. So that's one thing. Another thing is that with electricity, we have the tendency to stay up very late at night. Whereas otherwise, in India, throughout the year, depends which part of the country you're in, because there's only one time zone and it stretches over more than 1,000 kilometers laterally. Is it laterally or long? Lengthwise, yeah. So the sun sets and you know, well, it's time to wind down our activities and take rest. And then you automatically wake up early, that's another must for spiritual life, to wake up early and take advantage of that early morning time. You may not experience so much difference in the city between the early morning and the rest of the day. But if you're away from the smog and the neon lights, you can palpably perceive how that time of day is conducive for all spiritual activities. And you'll find in all serious religionists in any culture, they all rise early. The first namaz in Islam is before sunrise. In Buddhism, in Hinduism, or whatever you want to call it, in Christianity, also the first mass is early in the morning, and especially for monks. I was, shortly before I was allowed to join this movement, I was staying for some time in a Cistercian monastery in Ireland, where the prayers began every day at 3 o'clock in the morning. The morning is the best time for spiritual life. And no electricity means you automatically take rest early and rise early. You get in rhythm with nature. So we're very afraid. If you bring electricity, then you'll bring in one gadget, and then we need something else. And then before, within one or two generations, it's a city. Yeah. Well, the project, we have three projects in Gujarat, in India, that I'm personally overseeing. And there are others also. Bhakti Raghav Swami is overseeing a project near to Hebri, which is near to Udupi, which is southwest Karnataka. The projects that I'm overseeing, it means not on a day-to-day basis, but I'm involved in. One is presently situated near Vadodara in Gujarat, but that they're going to shift soon to Rajpipla district, and which is not really near. The nearest town of any size is Rajpipla, which isn't much of a town anyway. So it's really way out there, a long way from any town. Rajpipla, the population, it's probably not more than 1.5 lakhs. I don't know exactly. 150,000, which in India is just a village. In India, that's like a village. It's a district town, but it's not. How far is it from the farm? It's only about 12 kilometers. And then another project which we have is near to Hyderabad, Secunderabad. That's been going through some serious teething pains. But it's still alive. We don't expect it to be easy. And another project we have is in Salem district in Tamil Nadu. And there are others, as I say. The next best thing is the organic milk. Try and ask this gentleman here, if you want to get cows, milk from protected cows, please ask Tukaram Prabhu. He can help you. You may have to pay more. No, it's not really that very good because the cows are killed. They may graze instead of being shut up in some barn, but they're killed. They are killed. Trent, as a pious Hindu, you can just think about that. Well, certainly for your physical health, organic milk is going to be better than the regular milk. For your spiritual health, it's almost as bad. For your karmic health, it's almost as bad. You say the cows, before they're slaughtered, they have a somewhat happier, healthier life. If that's any consolation. It's a very heavy thing. It's horrific that they're killing the cows. Often in India, I give many public lectures in India, and I often say that in this country, which is supposed to be Dharma Bhumi, Punya Bhumi, the land of Dharma, which is sometimes translated as religion, Punya Bhumi, the land of piety, if one cow were slaughtered in one century, in 100 years, that would be a great scar I usually use the word kalank, for the whole nation. But in this country, daily, thousands and thousands of cows are being killed. This is... I recently discussed this in some detail with... I was staying in Rishikesh, and I discussed it in some detail with a person who's very much connected with Gita Press, Gita Bhavan. Gita Press has a huge establishment in Rishikesh, Gita Bhavan. So I discussed it in some detail, and the point that I wanted to, that I presented to him, is that as long as there is as long as India has a policy of industrialization, cow slaughter is going to continue. It must continue. It's not so much, it's not even so much the Hindu-Muslim. Another point I made is that if we really want to stop cow slaughter in India, we're going to have to convince the Muslims. Because if you just stop it, then it's going to be taken as a communal action. There's a lot of communal unrest in Hyderabad. It doesn't always get reported in the press. But I go to Hyderabad quite often. I hear about it. It's not allowed to be publicized in the Indian press. What happens is that the Hindus try to enforce the law at Eid that there should be no cow slaughter. It's actually the law, but as you know, in India, the law is often what people think it should be rather than what is written. So that creates communal unrest. And then the Muslims, they try to stop the slaughter of sheep and buffaloes at Durga Puja. So we should convince, one thing is to convince the Muslims. But as long as there is industrial society, one thing is that people's piety is reduced. And another thing is that India, apart from domestic consumption of beef, which is great and increasing, the major portion of India's beef goes to the Gulf countries, from which India gets oil. So they need the foreign exchange to import oil to support their industry. It's a major source of income. And the leather industry, which is concomitant with that. So I know that the present or the incoming new government, the party, they have at least a sentiment to stop cow slaughter. And among their shenanigans in Karnataka when they were in power, they also did make a law to ban cow slaughter, but it didn't get ratified. So they have that sentiment. But to actually implement it requires a serious... it should be done. And if any government's going to do it, there's a hope with this government. But I'm not so very hopeful because the present or the incoming Prime Minister, as far as I perceive, he's not been voted in, because after all, it was Modi who was voted in, not more than the BJP, maybe. It wasn't so much because of his Hindutva policies as because people perceive that he's a man who can facilitate the economic progress of India, and especially the business class of people. Modi means business. That's one of his slogans. So he's very much a proponent of industrialization. And the progress that Gujarat has made under him, as it's called, has been largely due to his facilitating industrialization. For instance, the SR projects and Reliance projects near Jamnagar. They're all huge townships. So it's difficult to put the two together. How are you going to promote industrialization, which runs on oil, which comes from the Gulf countries, which consume Indian beef, which produces the foreign exchange, so you can buy the oil? So it's a tangle. just talking, anyway, I could go and talk. I don't want to get too much into politics, but there are ideals, and we have to see how to practically implement that also. I don't think it would be a good idea in India to just say, stop cow slaughter. Just stop it immediately without preparing the economy and the people, especially the Muslims and the Christians, but especially the Muslims, for that. But as I say, we're venturing into politics. But if we are going to have a message for society, then we're going to have to think about these things also. Yeah, please. The economy went on. The idea was that if we didn't have slaves on the cotton plantations, then we couldn't, then the price of cotton would go up and we couldn't compete. Then cotton would become, it wouldn't be a major staple of the American economy. Would be lost because we'd have to pay these people instead of just supporting them, although probably the amount they got paid came out to pretty much the same thing. But as I understand, I read something about this recently. Anyway, Britain, which was a major recipient of America's cotton, was anyway looking to India and importing it from there. So it was an overemphasized factor, according to some historian. I just read something about that recently. You know, everyone's always reinterpreting history, as you might have noticed if you read about history. It's always getting reinterpreted. It's amazing. History, you don't know what's going on, because now I heard there's some idea that, the Second World War is inevitable, not because of Hitler, but because... Actually, Srila Prabhupada said something like this, because the British... Hitler may have been the instrument, but the British, they had conquered large portions of the world, and they had a protected... They had access to cheap raw materials and a huge market to sell their goods, whereas the German goods were better, but they didn't have a market. So, anyway, that's one analysis which, in my wanderings around the various fields of secular knowledge, I heard about this idea that actually the Second World War was inevitable, not because of Hitler specifically. Anyway, there are so many things. Chant Hare Krishna. But if we are to establish Krishna consciousness, we should, at least those who are brahmanas, they should be aware of this world to some extent. You can't be aware of it fully. And how to apply Krishna consciousness in this very complex and disturbed age.